Griffin Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I hope I didn't talk over the intro music. Couldn't hear it. I could just feel it. So nice to have you here on this July the 10th on the West Coast. Now July the 11th, 7-11 on the East Coast, and also in the Central Time Zone. We got a surprise for you tonight. As many listeners know, I have been pumping the fact that Dr. Judy Wood is going to be on this show this week. And in fact, I started making those announcements a couple of weeks ago. And something emergency type nature came up, and she had to bow out gracefully from appearing on the show at this time. Although she may be available in a few weeks, so we're looking forward to having her come on. I had no idea who would be on the show tonight, although I had aspirations of this guest coming on, and I shared that with a good friend, and we were able to pull a few strings, and lo and behold, tonight's guest is with us. This is going to be a pleasure for me. This is going to be the third time he's been on Evident Footprints. Twice when I was on the old network. He is an award-winning author and also a New York Times bestseller author. He has written several books which have caused quite a controversy around the world. Alien Agenda, Inside Job. Actually, he's got two versions of Alien Agenda. One is about the alien presence on this planet, and the other one is the untold story of the extraterrestrials among us. And he has recently, and I'm told just either today or yesterday, within the last couple of days, released another book. And this book is called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. That's a topic very close to the work that I'm doing with my genealogy research on many of the politicians. So we're going to have a very interesting discussion tonight with our special guest on Evident Footprints, author, journalist, researcher, and talk show guest, Mr. Jim Mars. Jim, welcome to Evident Footprints again.
Hey, Don, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, you got to hear me talk a little bit about what you've been writing. Of course, when I heard that you were available, it's that thing about synchronicities. Things just sort of fall into place. And I've been telling a bunch of people how much I wanted to have you on the show, and here you are.
Here we are. Well, maybe it's a conspiracy.
That sounds like a theory to me.
That comes back to the basic question of how one views the world, history, geopolitics. Is it just stuff happens? It could flop one way or another. Or is it that it's planned that way? Well, all you have to do is go back and study a little bit of history. Yes, planes crash, automobiles have accidents, ships sink, but my motto is, if it's not an act of God, it's a conspiracy, because it was planned that way. And I guarantee you, everything that you see and hear today, unless it's a traffic accident or a plane crash or something of that ilk, it's planned that way. This 2008 election, Don, I don't have to tell you, but let's share with your listeners, every time somebody makes a statement, somebody makes a counter statement, somebody wears a different colored tie, somebody makes, it's all contrived. It's all carefully planned that way, isn't it?
It sure is.
Nothing just happens.
Yes, I don't. I think I mentioned to you in a private conversation. Maybe I haven't. I've been talking about this so much, I lose track. I came out with a series of pieces in the Idaho Observer called "The Three Stooges Go to Washington," and I've already published my genealogical research on John McCain. And if you haven't
the cousin
read that,
of Barack Obama.
And Dick Cheney and Brad
Dick Cheney.
Pitt and
man, why? How come it is we just keep getting the same families? You know, isn't there anybody out there that can run for office that's not related to one of these globalists?
Yeah, it makes one think that there's a little bit of incest going on, doesn't it?
That's right. That's right. But, it's really amazing. And then, of course, as you well know. Right now, it seems like it's Barack Obama for the Democrats and John McCain for the Republicans. And not only are they related, but they're run by the same people. You know,
mm-hmm.
Henry Kissinger and the Council on Foreign Relations runs McCain, and Zbigniew Brzezinski and his son and the Trilateral Commission, which is an offshoot of the Council on Foreign Relations, runs Obama. And
mm-hmm.
even the most dedicated Obamaite now is beginning to have second thoughts, because all you got to do is just look at how the guy operates. He says all these wonderful things, but he doesn't do it. In fact, he's been shifting more and further to the right all along. And Don, I don't know if you kept up with this FISA bill vote in the Senate, but it blew me away, okay? Because this vote, this is the one where George Bush said, we've got to have this new foreign intelligence bill, okay, to protect Americans from terrorists. And if you don't rush this bill through, Americans are going to die. That's what he said, okay? Holy cow. But then it stalled a little bit in Congress because they were kind of balking at the contents, which gave blanket immunity to Bush's telecommunications buddies, who freely and willingly violated the law and the Constitution by allowing the Bush administration to surveil, quite illegally, U.S. citizens. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Bush says, I want this immunity. They've got to be given immunity. You can't sue them. You can't hold them accountable for violating the law, even though all of us, of course, are accountable for violating the law every day. And then he says, and if you don't include this immunity, I'm going to veto the bill. So, in other words, taking him at his word, he's willing to put American lives at risk just to protect his buddies in the telecommunications corporations.
Mm-hmm.
How insane is this? And so it finally comes to a vote, and because of the corporate control over Congress, the House voted it in, and now, yesterday, the Senate votes it in, and let's take a look at how the three top candidates voted this, because, Don, this blew me away. Hillary Clinton, who everybody has dumped on as being this extreme liberal, she votes against it. In other words, to protect Fourth Amendment protections. Obama, the man for change, the man who wants to carry the standard for a new and more free America, he votes for it. Okay, yeah, never mind the Fourth Amendment. Yeah, we'll go ahead and give them all immunity and let them keep spying on us. And what about John McCain, that dedicated fighter and that POW and military guy? He doesn't vote. He abstains. He's not there, so, you know, now he can wishy-wash and go either way he wants to. He doesn't even vote on it. Isn't that just amazing?
Mm-hmm. Now, answer this, Jim. How is a piece of paper going to protect us from terrorists?
It's not.
I mean,
it's not.
I mean,
and furthermore, I'll tell you this, Don. I don't overly fear terrorists because all they want is your life. You know, if you can see them coming, you can fight them or run away. I fear people who want my freedom and who are passing laws to take it away from me. That's who I fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about Muslims hiding in caves somewhere. We're talking about guys in suits in Washington, D.C., which kind of leads me up to the rise of the Fourth Reich.
Yes. Now, before we go into that, my listening audience is heard a lot about Operation Paperclip, the Nazis, the real identity of the Bush family. That's been confirmed, by the way.
Right.
I never had a chance to tell you that.
Right.
They are the Scherf family. And and I'm finding the same things in these other candidates, too. Very interesting research.
Well, you know, that's why George Herbert Walker Bush and his son, George W., made their way from Connecticut to Texas. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They had to get out of Connecticut because they knew that politically they were dead in the water because everybody in Connecticut knew that Prescott Bush was pro-Nazi. And, in
mm-hmm.
fact, had been prosecuted in late 1942 for being a financial front man for Hitler and his Nazis.
Yes.
So they came down to Texas, declared themselves Republicans and good conservatives, and wormed their way in through oil money, and then got into the governorship, looted the state treasury, and now they're looting the national treasury. And, Don, I guess the thing that really gripes me is that, you know, everywhere I travel around the country, everybody's down on Texas because Bush comes from Texas. Well, he's no more a Texan than I'm a New Yorker. They're a bunch of damn Yankee carpetbaggers is what they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, they're from Germany, if you want to
right.
get down to brass.
Yeah, before they came here, they came from Germany, just like the Windsors, right?
Yes, yes.
In my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, you'll find that in 2006, I believe it was, some letters were made public in England that showed that during the war, the Queen Mother wrote that she was perfectly okay with a Nazi invasion and occupation of England as long as they guaranteed that monarchy would remain in place. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I did the research on McCain, and I'm just throwing this out there for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to dive into your book in a moment here. I came across the Duke of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, or Gotha, as some people pronounce it, and they
right.
This was the forerunners of Queen Victoria, and in fact, it was her husband who
right.
became Prince Albert, and he didn't qualify to be the king. She was the queen, and his title, according to the royal dictates, made him a prince. And he had a son who was the Prince of Cornwall, Rothesay, or I should say Duke, and the Prince of Wales. And his name was Prince Albert Edward. And he was a philanderer. In fact, as I put the pieces together, first intuitively, I started coming across all the information to support what I was seeing intuitively. And they changed the name eventually. His son, George, when he became king, changed the name of the family from Battenberg to Mountbatten to
right.
anglicize it.
Right.
And that's where they ended up with the House of Windsor at that time. So right. you're really talking about Germans.
That's right. And that's why there's a whole section in my book devoted to the royal plot that was taking place to oust Winston Churchill and make peace with Hitler and the Nazis and become allies with Germany during World War II. And it was all done at the level of the royal family because they were the ones who, I mean, they not only supported the ideals of National Socialism, but they were relatives.
Well, yes, and I discerned that Jenny Jerome, who became Lady Randolph Churchill, was the most likely candidate to have given birth to John McCain, who became John Sidney McCain, Sr. So I urge you to read that research because you were working on the book that we're going to talk about right now while I was doing all this research, and it was uncanny
right.
that we were going down the same path, although, you know,
it's not
putting myself up there on the podium with you. Okay.
No. Hey, listen, we're all in this together. Remember my motto, none of us is as smart as all of us. And it takes all of this being put together. But see, the thing that has turned modern America into the Fourth Reich, it came from both ends. it came from, on the lower end, you had the paperclip scientist, rocket scientist, mind control scientist, all kinds of technicians that were brought over from Germany. Most of them are Nazis, and their backgrounds were whitewashed by John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles, who in the 50s were, Alan Dulles headed the CIA, and his brother John Foster Dulles was Secretary of State, so they were in a prime position to get all these guys in. Okay? Now, this is what's happening on the lower level. They brought in thousands of Nazis and brought them into this country, and they swapped their technology for immunity. And then at the top were the guys that were over, the bosses and the mentors of John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles were the Harrimans, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, and these were the same people who had created Hitler and the Nazis and funded them in the 1930s. And after the war, they just went right on. And they never, in fact, Winston Churchill, he said he had no problem with National Socialism. He just didn't want Germany running the show. Mm-hmm. And so that was his whole thing. This was a powerful, that was a whole world war that was fought between economic factions and occult societies.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, I guess you are moving into the subject content of your book, but I'd be interested in what propelled you to begin this work. Is it that you were basically going down the same rabbit hole that I and a few other researchers were going down?
Probably so. It's just simply a question of following the evidence. And you keep following the evidence and you keep pulling the vine, and it's just, you know, more and more is exposed. And it becomes pretty obvious. Also, I'm the kind of the last of a dying breed. I'm a generalist, okay? I know a lot about a whole lot, but I don't claim to be an absolute expert in any particular thing, but I know a little bit about most everything. And when you start putting it all together, the big picture starts becoming very, very clear. For years, ever since I was a kid, I've been a aficionado of the Third Reich. And of course, like most kids, early on it was, I liked the war movies and I liked the uniforms and the weapons, and I studied all about the Tiger tank and the Stuka and, you know, learned all this stuff. And then as I got older though, I began to, the big puzzling question I had was, considering the Germans in the 1930s, they were among the most educated, cultured, and sophisticated peoples in the world. How in the world did they get themselves sucked into that nightmare that became Hitler's Third Reich and the subsequent Holocaust? How did they allow themselves to do that? All they had to do was say, no, we don't want to do this. And I never could quite understand that. And then in the wake of 9/11, it seemed like history was simply recycling. We had, instead of the Congress burning down, we had the two World Trade Centers knocked down. Mm-hmm. And then immediately, instead of an enabling act, we had the Patriot Act. And then instead of the Homeland Security in the Reich, we had Homeland Security implemented here in the United States. And John Ashcroft, Attorney General, even openly talked about setting up concentration camps. And I'm just going, holy crud, what's happening here? You know, are we just recycling? Is this some kind of odd recurrence of the cycles of history? Or is there a plan going on by the same people who created the Nazis and who are now recreating a national socialist state in the United States? And when you go back, as you well know, Don, and see the number of American companies, corporations, rich families that were backing the Nazis and working with them all the way through the war, as late as early 1945, Standard Oil ships were in the Caribbean refueling Nazi U-boats. Early on, there was more gasoline going to Nazi Germany than we were getting, and we had all this terrible war rationing going on because of the shortage of gasoline. And mm-hmm. it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And once you can elevate your sights above the mechanics of war, I mean, let's face it, there's thousands of books out there on World War II, but the vast majority of them are concerned with the battles, the generals, the uniforms, the weapons, okay? But if you can elevate your sight above that and try to see who was actually maneuvering all of this, who benefited, what companies and corporations helped finance Nazi Germany and then profited all the way through the war and then remained in place after the war, and you begin to get a picture on who and how they were able to begin a new Reich in the United States. And when mm-hmm. I say Reich, I know you understand, but for the benefit of your listeners, Reich is simply the German word for empire. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, if you use it with a capital R, it's empire, but if you use it with a small R, Reich means rich or wealthy.
Absolutely. That's right.
So you could say that Reich is a empire of the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is what they are setting up right here in the good old U.S. of A.
Now, when I did my research, I became interested in who was pulling Hitler's strings. In other words, how did they bring him forward? Well, what I found was that he had some handlers himself. Karl Mayer was one, General Ludendorff, and I immediately established their connections to Tavistock in England.
Now, and let's not forget, everyone should not forget that when you mention Mayer, Captain Mayer, mm-hmm. that was his army superior. And Hitler is a World War One veteran, like most of the other veterans, were having a hard time of it, trying to make a living in the 1920s. And as a result, he took to acting as an undercover agent for the army. Okay? So, in other words, Hitler didn't just suddenly appear out of nowhere. He was a military intelligence agent who was assigned to go and look at this little fledgling political party called the German Workers' Party. And he went, he wasn't all that impressed, but he went back and he said to his military superiors, and he said, I think you'll like these guys. They want to rearm, and they want to repudiate the Versailles Treaty, and they think that we were stabbed in the back in World War One, and they think the Jews are behind everything. And of course, that fit right in with the thinking of his military superiors, so they begin to give him money to buy posters and to hold speeches, and they were the ones who started the whole Nazi movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, I came across quite a bit of evidence showing that, first of all, the Jesuits were thrown out of Germany, and they had scattered establishments around Munich and up near Dusseldorf, Hanover, Hamburg, and they kicked them out of there, and they kicked them out of France. So who was the first country they had Germany attack? Well, I mean, they went to Poland, of course, but moving to the west, they went
then
after
they moved
France.
To the west, came to the Low Countries and into France.
Yes, and so there's a Jesuit element there, and now you have to connect that to the Vatican. And Opus Dei, and do you think it was an accident that the Madrid Circular, which came out right after the war, came out of the seat of Opus Dei, which is the black cult society, just like the Jesuits? I mean, that's the black pope.
Well, see, that's the occult societies at work, because once Hitler began to build up the National Socialist German Workers' Party, and the acronym of National Socialism is Nazi, because they take the N-A from National and the Z-I from Sozialistic, the German spelling of socialistic, and that's where the term Nazi comes from. And once they got on the move, it was the occult Thule-Gesellschaft, or the Thule Society, that
mm-hmm.
backed Hitler. And what was their emblem way back in before 1920 the Thule Society's emblem was a backward swastika, the very same thing that Hitler used as his emblem of National Socialism. And the Thule Society was made up of very prominent aristocrats and bankers and industrialists. And so these were the people who were maneuvering Hitler into power. But, of course, you don't ever hear about that. It's always like, here's some madman that suddenly took control over a modern nation. You never get taught in school about what really happened and who was behind it.
Yes. Now, do you agree with the premise that he worked his way in to the people, or he began taking over the German people by working through the unions on a very low scale, speaking at guest houses, you know, pubs?
Right. Well, that was his whole Nazi party, was the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
Yeah.
And his whole platform was this leveling, okay? He wanted to do away with class distinctions. He said he was going to do away with that. He said he was going to give the working man, you know, more say in what he was doing. His program was socialism. National socialism was essentially no different than communism, except communism, they were trying to export that worldwide, and national socialism, as its name implies, could be confined within national boundaries. And this would allow the international bankers and financiers to play one nation off against another, as they had been doing for centuries. And that's why they supported Hitler, because they saw in National Socialism a form of socialism that they could control better than international communism.
Yeah.
And in fact, this blew me away. We all know that Hitler attacked Russia in June of 1941, Operation Barbarossa. And we know that early on, the German army was able to just crash through the Russian lines and surround whole armies, whole divisions. It was just incredible. And yet nobody ever explained to me, why did that happen? Did Hitler just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to attack Russia? Well, in a way, he did, because back in the 20s when he wrote Mein Kampf, he said right then that eventually Germany and Russia were going to have to go to war. So he was already set for that. But Germany really wasn't ready for war in 1941. But here's the fascinating thing. We don't get told this in school either. But Stalin, and this is based on new materials that are now coming out of the old Soviet Union. A lot of this was kept secret for years. But there's now documents and orders and various bits of evidence that are coming out now to show that Stalin had realized that he was not going to get Europe to vote themselves communism, so the only way communism was going to take over Europe was by military force. And as a result, he had massed his tanks and troops and planes on the western border and was planning to attack Europe in July of 1941. The Russians at that time had like 22,000 tanks, a lot of them heavy KV models and some of the new T-34s. The Germans were the only force that could possibly have stopped them, and they were outgunned tremendously. They only had 3,600 tanks, and these were the kind of the light PK-2s and 3s. So the only option to try to stop this massive communist onslaught in Europe was to launch a preemptive strike. And that's what Hitler did the month before Stalin was set to attack. And the thing that tells me that this is true is that Stalin was known to kill any officer who even looked crosswise at him, and yet none of the generals that were in charge of the Russian armies that got so defeated there at the beginning of Operation Barbarossa, none of them were either ever shot or punished or anything else, because they had all been following Stalin's orders. And the key to it, Don, was that the Russians were not in defensive positions. They were in offensive positions, getting ready to strike into Europe when Hitler attacked in June of 1941, caught them off guard, and was able to score tremendous successes for many months. It's an amazing, it's totally the reverse of almost the reverse of what we've always been taught about World War II.
Oh yes, and to boot, we're under this impression that Stalin rose to power somehow through the means that most of these dictators rise to power. He was secreted into Russia from Zurich, Switzerland, on a guarded train with Trotsky. They were both brought into the country to take over the government.
Right. Well, now you're talking about Lenin now, not Stalin.
Or Lenin, rather.
Yeah, it was Lenin and Trotsky that were brought into Russia from the West, backed by capitalist money, to take over the revolution in 1917, take over the Russian Revolution, and see to it that the Bolsheviks, the communists, won. Woodrow Wilson, I have read his writings, and he made it very plain that the bulk of aid going to Russia during World War I went to the Bolsheviks, the communists, not to the Kerensky government. So, see,
yeah.
We've created the same Wall Street capitalist, the same Bank of England capitalist, and they're all, of course, interchangeable, and they're all on interlinking boards of directors. They created communism in Russia, and then when it threatened to go worldwide, which is something they didn't want, they wanted the socialist program, but they didn't want one worldwide socialist program, because then you couldn't play off one economic bloc or one country against another for profit and control. So as a result, they had to reach into Germany and create national socialism and put this army intelligence agent, Adolf Hitler, in charge of it. And then they find, after he overran the Low Countries and France and was threatening England, and then managed to stop the communist invasion of Europe, in fact start crashing and cruising through the Soviet Union, they suddenly realized that they'd created another Frankenstein monster, and that now they were looking at perhaps worldwide national socialism. And they didn't want that either, so they had to ban both the communist nations and the capitalist nations that were left. They had to ban them together as allies to try to stop Hitler. Which, and I think we'd both agree it was a good thing they did so. But it's all maneuvering by the same financial interest.
It's a script, yes, and it always boils down to follow the money.
Exactly.
And here, I mean, we have this tremendous arms dealing going on. You have rubber moving into the market, and who's controlling that from the state side? Rockefeller. The railroad companies.
Let's not forget the most giant pharmaceutical industry in the world, IG Farben.
IG Farben, yes,
which,
absolutely.
You know, there were hundreds of U.S. companies that were dependent on IG Farben for licenses and patents and formulas, you know, for making chemicals and everything from paint to drugs, you know, and they controlled it all. And the same people controlled it. And the same people were there when Hitler rose to power. They were there during the war. And they remained there after the war and started putting it all back together again. Only this time without the German chauvinism, you know?
Yes. Now, today, speaking of... Go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say is, you know, today all of the agendas are still there. All of the methodology is still there. Only the outward manifestations and trappings have changed. Today, National Socialists don't wear swastika armbands and say, Heil Hitler. They wear smiley faces and they say, have a nice day, but they're still doing the same stuff.
Yes, yes. Now, on the surface, I hope the line is clear here. There's a lot of jitter. I'm using voice over internet protocol here. and it's they've been attacking talk shows lately. The war is spreading to the talk shows now.
Yeah.
They on the surface, when we think of all this money, you know, what are we? We're talking about their banking money, you know, their fiat money that
right.
that used to be backed by gold, and that's a
right.
key thing. And I know that you've done
yes,
a lot
gold
of
gold is a critical equation.
Yes, it's even today. It's all about gold. See all these things that are going on, these false flag events, like 9/11 and the London bombings and the Bali nightclub bombings. Why would they pick Bali, do you think? It has everything to do with where large deposits of gold are.
Isn't that where some of the Japanese gold hoards were still buried?
Yes, the Philippines and Indonesia. So, you know, Bali figures into the equation just as much. And then you had the ricin attacks. Well, in Tokyo a number of years back, if for those of us old enough to remember that, that was obviously something directed toward those holding the Hirohito gold.
Right.
So there's geographical significance as to why these events are occurring, and it has to do where the gold deposits are. And I know you've done a lot.
Why is it that you suppose that they want the gold so bad? Is it really just for its intrinsic worth?
No, there's another dimension to this whole thing.
That's right. Circles within circles.
Yes, and you know, we're talking, the listeners right now think that we're just talking about the historical figures that we learned about in history class and seen in the movies. You gotta go into the higher technologies, the higher realms,
right.
outside of this atmosphere, so to speak.
Right. You've got to learn about the Nazi Bell project. You've got to learn about the white powder of gold and the capacity for perhaps free energy and manipulating the basic energy at the atomic and subatomic level. It's really what's going on today, only this is the big, deep, dark secret. We don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know from my research and a lot of this, a lot of what I learned from both sides of the field, so to speak, when I became aware of Otto Skorzeny's deathbed confessions to Eric Berman, and then I followed up on the leads, and wherever I was unable to find a dot to connect, Skorzeny's information led me to the promised land, we'll say. And I began being able to connect the dots, and I focused on the relationship between George Scherf, the accountant, business manager, secretary of Nikola Tesla, and the fact that Skorzeny adamantly said that they were routinely stealing his inventions, and they were being shipped over there. So you couple that technology, which was even today it's cutting edge, with alien technology, and what do you have?
Right.
You know, you've got a monster. And they came over yep. here, and what's one of the first things they did under Operation Paperclip, they created NASA.
That's true. And what I write about in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is how there were actually three space programs going on. There were two public ones and one covert one. There was the public Russian space program, and then there was the public U.S. space program, and then there was this hidden Nazi space program, where mm-hmm. the Nazi scientists were not only in touch with each other, but at the highest levels of Wall Street and the Council on Foreign Relations. The same people who had backed Hitler were then in control up there, and they also were benefiting from the technology. And what do you do if you want to keep a space program hidden? You compartmentalize it so that one side doesn't know what the other side's doing. And as a result, through this international financial control at the top and the Nazi scientists at the bottom, they were able to to manipulate the Russian-Soviet space program, which they were into building heavy lift rockets that could put big payloads up in space. That's why they were able to put the first woman, the first dog, the first man, the first Sputnik into space. And we were working on the sophisticated guidance systems and computer technology to for guidance and telemetry. And at the Nazi level, they were putting the two together and making very effective spacecraft.
Yes. Now, for those listeners out there that are hearing you say all this and thinking, what do you mean, two space programs? I've been told literally that when they launch, let's say they have a shuttle launch at Cape Kennedy, there's another one occurring, some other event, maybe not even a shuttle, taking off at Edwards Air Force Base at the same time. Everyone's attention is on Florida, and they've got another one going up, doing a totally different mission. So one acts as a cover for what's really going on. Any comment about that?
Yes, exactly. In fact, I document in there how that both the U.S. space missions, including most of the Apollo missions, and some of the Russian missions, were the launch dates and times were set not by any scientific criteria, but by the astrological alignment of the stars. Which is amazing to me, because that means, you know, whether or not you want to believe in astrology and the portents of the stars as they go into certain alignments, it doesn't matter whether you want to believe in that or not. The point is, somebody who had the power and authority to set NASA space launches, dates and times, as well as someone in Russia doing the same thing, they did believe in this. Because it's been proven that those launch dates were set according to astrological alignments. And that again shows that the same people who in the same occult societies were running both sides of the, what we thought were two independent space programs.
Yes, exactly. And then we have the International Space Station. And,
right.
and basically what that is the New World Order up in space.
Right.
What else can you call it?
I don't know, but that's pretty much it.
And then, you know, what's your take on the Japanese lately? You know, they're
jumping
this
into the space race too now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
And, well, you know, it's I'm just wondering what's going to happen when the Japanese or the European Space Agency or one of these, what's going to happen when they get up to the moon and start trying to find that lunar lander and it's not there?
Yeah.
That's going to cause a stir.
Yeah, I saw some photos.
I don't know that that's the case, but wouldn't that be an interesting turn of events?
Yeah, I saw some photos that John Lear recently showed and had published via Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy's Project Camelot video. He was describing the yellow atmosphere. Now, what's interesting is I noticed that when they have a sporting event, when we have a full moon, like maybe a night baseball game, if the sky is clear, they'll focus one of the cameras on it, usually around stretch time, you know, in between innings or the half innings during the seventh inning. And they'll come out of a commercial with it focused on the moon, and you can see sort of a yellow haze around the moon. Now, a lot of people could argue that that's just a photographic anomaly that appears because of the distance. Yet John Lear says that, unlike what we were told, that the moon has a 6/10 or 1/6 of our gravity here on Earth, it's actually 64% of the gravity that's here. So there is an atmosphere up there, and he says it shows yellow, and he showed a picture of a nuclear reactor sitting there. Now, this is not on the dark side of the moon. This is on our side of the moon. And what's interesting, Jim, is I found on Google Earth, This was an intuitive search I was doing. I went west of Colorado Springs to a second mountain range to the west, and I was looking for a crescent mountain range, and I found it. And I went west of that, another mountain range, and nestled in the mountains, I found a couple of nuclear reactors. Mm. And they don't look like anything you've ever seen on Earth.
Mm.
In fact, they look just like the one on the moon. And when I saw this photo of John Lear's, I said, holy cow, I should send you this photo. They have it whited out now on Google Earth, but I've got a photo of it before they masked it out. You know, they put this phony cloud cover up there.
Right.
You'll be amazed to look at this. And then if you look at the video interview, the last one that Bill and Carrie did with John Lear, he shows this image, and you're going to say, darn, that's the same thing. The same people, the same entities built both of these devices. It's pretty mind-blowing. So what we have going on
now, do you feel like this was ETs, or could this be some earthbound technology?
No, ETs. Okay. ETs. I'll stake my life on it. ETs.
Okay. Well, convince me. I've wrote what I've been told is the top-selling nonfiction UFO book in the world, Alien Agenda. It's mm-hmm. been translated into about a dozen foreign languages. And so, of course, all that's real. It's only the poor people who are caught in the matrix of electronic matrix built by the corporate mass media who are still wonder if there's any reality there. But, of course,
yeah.
There is.
Well, we pretty much discount them anymore on this show. I just tell people, if you want to hear the truth, just tune into the show every night. We'll have a different guest on, and we're going to talk about the things that the media won't tell you and the things that the government's hiding from you. What else do you want to learn? What else do you want to know?
Right.
You're as much a celebrity as any other they have on TV, and I'd rather have you on than tap dancing with Paris Hilton, you know.
Well, you know, they just about anything they can come up with to distract everyone. It's really pretty amazing.
Yes. Well, so we're jumping all over the place here, but basically,
yeah, unfortunately. Well, but there's so much to talk about.
Well, I have to have you on again, you see. That's how,
yeah,
that's
we're
how
about
I get
out of
you.
Time.
Well, we still have some time if you've got, you know, if you don't have any place to be in the next 10-15 minutes.
No. I'll tell you, though, it really is. It's amazing how things what things are going on and how things are operating. And see, the thing is today, I think everybody either consciously knows and understands and will admit, or at least subconsciously feels that the United States, America, has gotten off track somewhere. You know, we're going down the wrong path. We're not doing the things that we really should be doing. And they can't quite figure out who to point the finger at. The liberals blame the conservatives blame the liberals, and Democrats blame Republicans, and Republicans blame Democrats. And I think it's important for people to understand that there are these national socialists, these Nazi globalists, who are have tremendous resources. Because, after all, they had access to the entire loot of the European continent during World War II. Every place the Nazis overran, they took everything. They're still trying to get some of the artwork back and some of the jewelry and some of the precious stones and everything else. In fact, in my book, you're going to hear and read the evidence that it seems that one of the most legendary treasures in the history of the world, and Don, you want to talk about gold, this is a huge catch of gold, known as Solomon's treasure, and it was mm-hmm. all held in Solomon's temple over in Jerusalem until the Romans overran it and took a good portion of that treasure back to Rome as war booty. And then 400 years after the Jewish revolt in Judea, the Goths sacked Rome, and they took the portion of Solomon's treasure, and where did they take it? They took it to their home stomping grounds in the Pyrenees foothills in southern France.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave rise to the French aristocratic families, including Saint Bernard, who fomented the First Crusade. They were going to bring freedom and democracy to the Middle East, but actually they knew the rest of the treasure was over there buried in catacombs under the Temple of Solomon, which by then had become the palace of King Herod. So they went over there, they conquered Jerusalem, they set up a military order called the Poor Knights of the Temple, and which shortened became the Knights Templars.
Templar. Yeah.
And they went in there and excavated and recovered the rest of Solomon's treasure, and they took it back to the Pyrenees foothills of southern France, and Solomon's treasure, the greatest treasure in the history of the world, not only of gold, silver, and precious stones, but of artifacts, ancient artifacts, and also of scrolls and text that were possibly telling about ancient technology that we're still trying to rediscover. And it was all there. And what happened to it? In March 1944, according to the stories, Otto Skorzeny leads a brigade of SS troopers, and on March the 16th sent a one-word telegram back to Berlin, Eureka, which of course means I found it. And I've been to Rennes-le-Château in the area of Monseigneur, and I've talked to some of the old folks who said, yes, there were these pack trains coming out of the mountains, and then all of this stuff was loaded on sealed railroad cars and then taken back into Germany. So it seems like that the Nazis got Solomon's treasure. So based on that, plus the loot of Europe, plus all the money they salted away in Swiss accounts, plus the gold that they got hold of, I mean, you could see where they had the economic wherewithal to create thousands of corporations all around the world, and which then began to slowly buy up all the other corporations.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, I was concerned, coming from the media, that the mass media in this country had come under the control of about a dozen corporations. Today, it's down to five. Five corporations determine everything you see and hear. And
except on
leading,
evident footprints.
That's right. And one of the leading ones, Don, is Bertelsmann AG of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
That has now become the top publisher in the English language. The publishers that they own or control include Random House, Dell, Bantam Books, you know, Fawcett Books, you name it. And they control book clubs, and they control history channels and everything else. And during the war, Bertelsmann was the largest publisher of Nazi propaganda for the German army. So, and then we look, now we got Bertelsmann's largest publisher in the English language. We've got a Pope sitting right now who as a youth was a Hitler youth in Poland. We've got Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of one of the most popular states in the United States, California, whose father was a Nazi Gauleiter, a party official. We got Bush sitting as president, whose grandfather was prosecuted by the federal government in 1942 for being a financial frontman for Hitler and the Nazis. We're even wearing their helmets today, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Our soldiers are wearing those flanged, coal scuttle type helmets, the same type that the Nazis wore in World War II. And, you just look about you. The Reich is taking place.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Even after he got busted, Prescott became a senator in 1952.
Right, here's what's fascinating. I bet you don't know this little tidbit of history. Why didn't they make a bigger deal when they stripped Prescott Bush of his holdings in Union Banking Corporation, fined him millions of dollars? Why didn't they make a bigger deal of that? You know why? Because in the summer of 1952, when Prescott had to be aware that he was under investigation, that he was likely to get in some trouble because of all his business dealings with Fritz Thyssen's money and who had bankrolled Hitler. What does he do? He helps create the United Service Organization, the USO, so beloved by all veterans and all military people, you know. And you think about some of your World War II era movies, you know, USO Canteen and the USO people, Bob Hope with the USO going out to entertain the troops. How could they, in the middle of World War II, made a big public deal about the fact that the man who created the USO, so beloved by the military, was actually a front man for the Nazis? It would have been a propaganda disaster. So they just kind of slapped him on the wrist and let him go. But the people in Connecticut didn't forget, and that's why his son and grandson had to bail out of the state and come to Texas, Wild and Willy, Texas, so they could start making their claim and their climb to political stature.
Yeah, that's
all an amazing story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All this, by the way, I got to put a very unashamed plug in here. All of this is detailed with sources and index and the whole thing in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich.
Yes, I want to post that to my website. It would be there if that maintenance wasn't going on that I was telling you about.
Yeah,
for anyone that goes to my...
conveniently come up just as you're trying to post stuff, right?
Yeah. You think they might do it on the weekend or something, you know, on a late Saturday or Sunday night, but this has been going on for a couple of days. They're doing a big overhaul. I've not encountered one like this, but that happens. But I'll get it posted on my site. Now, is your book going to be available on your website, or are you selling it exclusively through Amazon.com?
No, it can be ordered from any bookstore. It's in all the large bookstores.
Okay.
And it's on Amazon. And yes, I'm in the process of trying to obtain some. And what we'll do is sell signed editions off my website. But I don't think we're quite set up for that yet. This book has only been out now for a little over a week.
Okay. What's going to be more expensive, the book or the signature?
Oh, the signatures, that comes pretty free.
Okay. I just want to let people know.
Well, I guess the difference is we have to, on the website, as you well know, we have to sell them for list price because that's what I have to pay for them. Whereas Amazon, I notice, is selling for a pretty good percentage off.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope that doesn't cut into your royalties anyway.
Oh, well, if enough people will go out and get this book, I guarantee them a wild read, and they are not going to feel cheated in the least. And they'll tell their friends, and then they'll go buy some more.
Yeah. Now, on many of my shows, Jim, I encourage the audience not to believe what we're saying. You know, we tell them, do the research. When you come out with a book like this, with such profound and detailed research that you didn't do overnight, it offers everyone an opportunity to see what has been hidden from us. And then it raises the question, why? Why is this hidden from us? What are they afraid of? Are they afraid of us waking up and figuring out what's going on before they take complete control?
Well, of course, that's the thing they fear the most. That's why, if you'll remember, my last New York Times bestseller was Rule by Secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't possibly make any of this work if they announced openly what their plans were. You know, nobody's going to stand still if they stand up and say, okay, we're going to create a Fourth Reich right here in the United States. No. They've always got some story, some cover, usually to help the children. One of the most socialistic programs ever laid down in this country has been this no child left behind nonsense. My wife's a school teacher. I know all these school teachers. None of them have a kind word to say for this. This is a socialistic program that's trying to level all the students, let the poor ones skate, suppress the bright ones. It's nothing but just sheer socialism in action. And yet it's been foisted off on us by a Republican president who claims to be a conservative. When you hear the term neocon, which stands for neoconservatism, please understand that neoconservatism is nothing less than National Socialism, the acronym of which is Nazi.
Yes. And then Hillary Clinton's Children's Defense Fund, which is basically just a money laundering operation.
Right.
And again, yeah, they're using the kids as this is for underprivileged children. Well, I don't see any children becoming less underprivileged. I don't know about you. In fact, I'm seeing more adults becoming underprivileged, too.
Exactly. And when Obama talks about change, I think he's talking about taking the change out of your pocket.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say, Don. You've got the liberal Democrats who actively and vocally push socialistic programs, and then you've got these neoconservatives, which are nothing but national socialists, that have now taken over the Republican Party, and they talk all the right talk about conservatism, but then they implement socialist policies too, because they're all run by the same globalist secret societies who are trying to bring about a global socialist system.
Yes. And they use these Tavistock methods. Polling is the first one. And then they bring up abortion and then health care. Well, we don't have health care. They're still aborting babies. I think the number's up to like 60 million, something like that. And growing every day.
There's other ways of doing things.
Yeah. This is pure insanity, what we're witnessing here. And so I recommend to the listeners to definitely read Jim's book, all of his books, actually. I've read a few of them. I have not read your new one. I'm going to go out and get it, though. And next time you're on, I'll have more poignant questions to ask you. But this has been very interesting. And I look forward to having you on again soon. So that invitation's out there if you will accept.
All right. We'll just do it again because there's so much to talk about. And people need to know this stuff. I mean, you know, you can't possibly understand what's going on in the world unless you understand where we came from, why things are the way they are, and follow the money. Okay?
Yes.
You got to follow the money.
And I
don't care how brilliant you are. Some of the people listening right now are probably just as smart as you and I, maybe smarter. But I don't care how smart you are. You'll never make a correct decision or have a correct opinion on things if you are operating from incomplete or erroneous information.
Good point.
Don't you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I want to give your website URL out to the audience. Jim's web address is Jim Mars, that's MARRS.com. And you're going to see a lot of great news articles posted right there on the homepage. And you may even jump out of your seat if you're not paying attention. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep, and that's probably true. Well, Don, it's really been a pleasure to be with you.
It's been a pleasure having you.
We'll have to do this again.
Yes, it's been a pleasure having you on. Again, thank you so much on such short notice for coming on Evident Footprints again. And we'll get you on real soon. And I'm going to get that book page posted up there so people will be directed to your work. And, in fact, I'll put all your books up there if I have your permission to do that.
Yes. Because, actually, this sounds a little weird, but they actually do kind of follow a progression. My first book, a New York Times bestseller, was Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, which was a basis for the Oliver Stone movie, JFK. And then I would ask people, well, what do you think's the next big, deep, dark, secret government cover-up? And they would say, well, we'd really like to know what's the truth about UFOs. Are they real? Are they here? You know, is there anything to this? What do we know about them? So I put all of the best and most credible information about UFOs into Alien Agenda. And then that led to the question about, well, wait a minute, maybe they don't come and land and say we're here in peace because there's nobody who speaks for Earth. Who can speak for Earth? There's nobody. Putin doesn't speak for Earth. Bush doesn't speak for Earth. Half the country indicates they don't even think he speaks for the United States. And so who's in charge? Well, that led to Rule by Secrecy, which track the secret societies who are trying to manipulate our society and trying to manipulate the economy and corporate life and political life of this country in secrecy. And they, of course, track back. We've talked about that for the pretty much the whole program. And then, of course, when you say, well, what are they doing today? And that brings us up to the rise of the Fourth Reich. Now, I'm not trying to say that goose-stepping, black-clad Germans are trying to take over the world again, although there's probably a few of those in there. No, these are the globalist financiers and manipulators, the wealthy elite, the oligarchy, who financed and began communism, and then had to finance and begin National Socialism to try to check the spread of communism, and then had to arrange World War II to stop the spread of Nazism, and now are rebuilding a National Socialist state in the United States with our new American empire as its foundation. And that's, as they say, is the bottom line.
Yes. Well, we're out of time, Jim, but again, thank you, and we'll have you on again soon. Take care there in the Southwest, and I'll take care of the Midwest.
There we go.
And we'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Freedom and democracy, liberty, love and life.
Okay.
Thanks much, Don. Good night.
All right. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Our special surprise guest tonight, Mr. Jim Mars. We'll be back again soon. Hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit his website again. That address is jimmars, MARRS.com. And special thanks also to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and Seth Hendrick on the sound. I wish everyone, if I didn't give you a shout out tonight, I'll make up for it tomorrow. Wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and I wish you a good night.